It is March the 12th, 2013. I am Steve Roark, the webmaster of www.gerweck.net, gerweck.net, your source on the World Wide Web for all your pro wrestling news since 1997. And today I welcome a very special guest to gerweck.net. He had a brief stint in WWE, ECW as Ryan Braddock. And just recently you saw him compete in the TNA Gut Check. And just recently earned a contract with TNA Wrestling, Jay Bradley. And today my special guest is Jay Bradley. How are you doing today, Jay?
I'm not doing too bad. It's a day off here, so I have puppy time and laundry time right now. But other than that, yeah, man, it's all right.
Cool. Well, we appreciate your time today. I know you've been very busy. And, of course, just recently we saw you compete in Gut Check. And congratulations on earning a TNA contract.
No, thank you. I appreciate it.
Can you talk a little bit about your TNA Gut Check experience, how you got started with the Gut Check, and just your overall perception of the experience?
How I got started. I saw Al Snow at an indie show in Illinois probably about a year ago now. It was like last March or so. He had just got, I guess what you would call it, a promotion or the position that he's in now as a director talent and television at TNA. And I had a relationship and, worked with Al when I was with WWE as a coach, or when he was my coach at OVW. But he kind of, I want to say, if you want to take, not necessarily a full-blown mentor, but he was also someone who, not that I confided in, but he also gave me a lot of extra direction. We just kind of clicked as personalities, had a lot of the similar interests outside the ring as well. So we got along really well from my time in OVW. I got to catch up with him at an indie show. Hadn't seen each other in probably about a year or two prior to that. And then, like I said, we just caught up. He shot me an email probably later that week and was just like, hey, I just got this promotion or this position. Did you have any recent footage or anything? And I sent him some stuff. I think I sent him me versus X-Pac. And another match that were fairly recent at the time. And, he called me back right away and was like, hey, I'd like you to come down and do a dark match. Let's set this up. And we did. They booked me for a dark match. And then shortly after they booked me, they had to move it back due to Impact going live. So their schedule taping kind of, got tweaked. And being there for a dark match against Magnus for the first Impact that was live ever from, the Impact Zone last year. I got a lot of good feedback from not only Al, but, Bruce Pritchard, Kurt Angle, Bully Ray, Dixie. There was a lot of positive, talk that day. So I was very happy with the way things were going, and I had a feeling, something would happen. I just didn't know when. And I was kind of told, unofficially that, they want to have me around, but it was a matter of when and what they were going to do with me. So fast forward a few months, pretty much the summer, I was actually at a wedding on New Year's Eve and reached in my pocket after the ceremony and had, missed calling a voicemail from Al. Today, give me a call. I got an opportunity for you if you're interested. And of course, so he called me and said, hey, I'd like you to come in on these dates for Gut Check. We're going to tweak it, though, going forward, where it's going to be two indie guys or two non-contracted guys, as opposed to working with one of our talent. And that's all I knew pretty much going into it. So that's how I got there. From then on, I kind of put two and two together that I would be working Brian Cage. And then that day, you get there, typical TV day, from what I've experienced, and you get there, noon, one in the afternoon or so. Kind of got, my run sheet, where I needed to be, what time, where I would be placed on the show. Worked, wrestled the match. I felt that, it was a very typical TV match, in my opinion. We had about, I think, 7 minutes of the segment or so. But once you get in the ring, that gets kind of trimmed down a little bit, kind of did what I had to do to stand out. And again, I got a lot of good feedback from everybody involved, a lot of you know, people in the locker room, Chris Daniels, Kazarian, again, Angle, Bully, Matt Morgan, a lot of people were, you know, coming up to me, and, great job tonight, man. You really looked like you belonged there. And then, like, blew up on Twitter that night, which kind of, you know, blew me away in a very pleasant way and, you know, very humbled by that. But, you know, I ended up, you know, the Boomstick and my performance was, you know, trending worldwide. And actually Dave Lagana came to me after the end of the show and was like, you do know you were, you know, trending worldwide. And I was like, really? And so afterward, I, you know, I don't want to say I knew I had it in the bag because I really didn't, because it's wrestling. Things change, you know, daily in this business, and you never know what kind of the office or the writers are thinking. Like, you know, it could have been like, you know, I did a good enough job to earn a spot, but maybe they saw something in Brian that they could have used immediately, or they were looking for someone like Brian and he just fit the bill. And, you know, you never know what they're going to do sometimes. But I was very content and very happy with the performance and the reaction. And so I knew it was just kind of like, well, the old saying, it's kind of up to the judges, you know, whatever they want to do. And the worst case scenario was I just gave myself a, you know, 5 to 7 minute, you know, advertisement on live TV for what I could do to, for any other wrestling company out there that would want to hire me. So that was the experience.
I just wonder what your overall perspective is of the gut check process. Obviously, you have come through WWE developmental system. You were in Deep South. You were in OVW. You were in FCW. And just your thoughts on the way TNA uses the process to find talent. You were saying, you know, they're going to use independent wrestlers out there versus, you know, wrestlers they have under contract. I just wonder what your overall opinion is of TNA gut check in terms of finding new talent.
I think it's a great idea, and not only just because, you know, it got my foot in the door, so to say, but you're taking guys who are looking for an opportunity, and you're seeing what they can do in either the moment, which is where, you know, they're going to wind up. You're going to see how ready they are, how unready they are, and from a talent perspective, there's a probably like what the number two company worldwide for pro wrestling is giving you free airtime to, you know, advertise yourself, to show the wrestling world, all the fans, the promoters, what you are and what you can do, what you could be. And you're not paying for that TV time. They are. And that TV time is very precious, but they're putting it into you to showcase what you have to possibly earn yourself a job. So I think it's a great thing that, you know, they've taken, you know, how people get jobs, you know, as far as like, oh, you got to send your tapes in or your footage in, it gets reviewed. Well, they've made it, you know, an entertainment segment out of it to show the fans, like, this is how you get into TNA. This is how people earn jobs in pro wrestling. And WWE is no different. They're just not televising it. And I think that's something that TNA is doing differently to set themselves apart from other pro wrestling companies is something like this. You know, it's still relatively new. There's only been, you know, less than, you know, what is it, like 10 gut checks total. There's been less than a dozen contestants, if you want to call us that. So I think it's a work in progress. It's obviously being tweaked as it goes. I don't see negative thing on it. So anybody who wants to bag on it or is a fool and really doesn't understand wrestling or what you have to do to, you know, to get to where you want to be in those upper levels. So yeah, I think it's a great thing.
What would you think about, obviously we've seen WWE do the Tough Enough series. You know, we had Stone Cold, you know, come back to do a season of Tough Enough. I just wondered the thoughts of maybe Gut Check becoming a regular TV show a la a Tough Enough series.
You know, I thought I heard some murmurs on that when they first started doing it. Here's the thing. I think Gut Check is different than Tough Enough, where Tough Enough is about, you know, driving the ratings of a TV show for a season and whatnot and building drama overall. And let's be honest, like, that show really doesn't have the best track record for creating stars. You know, I think they got The Miz out of it. I know Ryback was there. You know, after he was there, went away, got rehired, and now, you know, kind of is what he is now. But you think of all the people that have come through there, and you know, once the show ends, you know, what do they really do? How often are they, do they stick around? Oh, Morrison was with it, you know, too. There's another guy who did really well. But I think their idea there, and, you know, I got offered to do The Last Tough Enough when they re-brought it out, and I actually turned it down because to me it was just like, okay, you're going to – I just got finished with your developmental program for 3 years. I worked with all your talent, and with a bunch of guys who – you know, who are just, you know, looking to be famous or looking for a break, and you're going to give me $500 a week, and then afterward you can just go tell me to, you know, to go F off. You know, you never see me again. You know, that didn't really sit too well with me. It was kind of like, okay, you're throwing me in there with, like, Miss USA and former football players, and I knew it's just about ratings. It was just about, you know, filling a time slot to see if it was going to fly on the WWE network or if, you know, it was going to be a viable option, where I think Gutcheck is more of the I don't want to call it I guess you can call it like a job audition. You know, you're like, here, this is what you're doing. You know, if you can hit the home run here, or if you can connect with the audience, if you can get your stuff over, you're going to get a job. Whereas Tough Enough, I felt was more, well, let's see what kind of stupidity these guys are going to get into now. You know, let's see who's going to talk back to Bill DeMott or Stone Cold, or who's going to, you know, who's going to stand out as the wrestler, or who's going to be the fool. It was more about that, I feel, than the actual during a wrestling contract. So that's where I think they differ.
I think that's a good point, that they've done a number of seasons of Tough Enough, and as you said, in the final analysis, they didn't find a lot of stars coming from there. In fact, a lot of the guys that didn't win ended up getting, like, developmental contracts. So you make a good point.
Well, let me cut you off too here, Steve. There's something else just popping up.
Yeah.
Look, you had a guy, The Last Tough Enough, you had a guy win it who was, you know, a former football player. And I'm not saying that, you know, that he's not passionate or it's not for him or whatever. But, you know, he wins it. He was already in the developmental system prior to winning it. So you wonder how much of that has been scripted for him. He didn't handle it well, or the show, the developmental system, and they sent him away. Yet they had a guy like Matt Cross, who's been wrestling forever, who's got a great look and is very athletic, and they passed on him. And beyond that, they had a guy in there, Austin Aries, who was cut, I think, at the final cut, if I remember hearing correctly, who then takes an opportunity with TNA and is a huge star for them now. So, like, what are they really looking for? Because you had two guys right there who are obviously better wrestlers, better performers, but you take the former football player, you know, with, you know, the baggage that he had. Why? Because it created more drama, as opposed to wanting, you know, people who love the business and could be a star for your company. So
that's a good point. That's a good point. I wonder what your status is now, because obviously we've seen you won the gut check in January, and we've seen a couple of the gut check people that once they get a contract, we don't see them. I know, like, Taylor Hendricks, for example. I think she won, what, last fall, and we really haven't seen much of her. So just curious, you know, what's your status, and when do you think we'll see you more on television?
My status is this. My contract officially took effect on the 1st of March. I'm currently working out at OVW and training here, which was kind of a mutual agreement. I'm very fond of OVW, Danny Davis and his staff. I had a great experience when I was here before. So when they asked if I would be willing to come back down here and work out, it was a no-brainer. Like, I'm being paid to pro wrestle. Like, I'm not sitting here doing nothing. And I'm, you know, I'm earning a paycheck doing what I love. Plus, here I seem to be surrounded by a very good staff of knowledgeable people as far as trainers and management, both at TNA and OVW. And, you know, a lot of people here have very good attitudes as far as, you know, they want to learn, they want to get better, they're in a good spot to do it, whereas opposed to you go to other indies where you have to, you know, it's a headache to hustle for your money or to get what you feel you pay or you owe, and then you have to deal with, you know, bull promoters who should be buying tickets as opposed to buying rings and boots and getting in the ring or running shows. So it's nice to not have to deal with any of that and being paid to work out and wrestle. Plus, I still stay with, busy within the company. Like in my experience in this business, when, push comes to shove and the numbers get crunched at the bottom line, if it needs to make room, the first guys that get looked at to get axed are the guys sitting around doing nothing. So you're sitting around at home getting paid, getting a paycheck, but you're not earning it. Well, sorry, we don't have anything for you. You're costing the company money sitting at home doing nothing. Whether you're doing nothing or you're staying in shape or you're working the indies too, if you're allowed, it's regardless. I felt this way. I'm here. I'm taking the initiative to work out, stay in shape, get in better shape, help out some of the talent that's here, contracted or otherwise. So I'm staying busy and visible within the company I work for. So I prove myself to be more of an asset rather than a liability, even when I'm not on television. So that's my take. What I'm currently doing for the past week, what I'm going to be doing the next week, I don't know. Hopefully I get a phone call here in the next day or so to say, get my ass to Chicago, back to Chicago, which is my hometown, for the first Impact on the Road, which is out of the Sears Center in Chicago. Again, that's not my call. I know a lot of wrestling fans in Chicago have been, tweeting to me or hitting me up on my Facebook page asking if I'm going to be there or they only want to go if I'm going to be there, sort of a thing. I'd love to say yes. I just don't know at this point. I know I'm very, very favorably as far as writers and the TNA office goes, but it's just one matter, one of those things of finding the right thing. And I think, I'm fine with that because, as you know, if you've watched my career, Steve, WWE never found, well, we had the right thing a couple times, but things kept getting detoured. And when they finally threw me up there, I was just thrown up there and, left out, the pasture, so to say. And I think TNA, and I know Al realizes that, and we're trying to prevent that from happening in the future. So I'm all for it. Let's take a breath here. I'm only going to get better or stay crisp in the ring, being here and working with guys. Let something develop where there's time for me on television to, go out there and get myself over, to connect with a character, with the audience, and be the star long-term that I know I can be for this company that WWE, passed on for whatever reason. I feel I can be a huge asset for this company and be a big star and be a TNA Impact Wrestling, homegrown star, so to say, because I'm not really well known to, the mass market or the mass fans. The diehard wrestling fans or the internet community will know who I am because I've been around, but you look at guys like TNA, a guy like Matt Morgan or, Bobby Roode or even Angelina Love when she was here, they were all other places and had other opportunities, just like I had before they got to TNA. But when they got to TNA is when they really, got the opportunity to shine and really got the ball and became stars. I wholeheartedly feel I can do the exact same thing here.
I wonder, because you were in OVW when it was a WWE developmental territory and you were training there.
Yep.
And obviously OVW now is a TNA developmental territory. I just wondered how things have changed there. How's the relationship with TNA and OVW working out, and how's it changed since it was a WWE territory?
To be honest, I think it's changed for the better. At least in my experience so far, it's been very limited. So far, I've only been here for a couple shows, a week in the shows and television last week. As far as from a talent perspective, far less stress and far less BS to deal with. Like I felt when I was here with WWE, even as groomed and as I became and how much I improved here and how much I learned, you always felt, at least I felt I did. I know I talked about other talents too, like everybody walked around on eggshells with their butthole puckered the whole time, like worried about, everybody was job scared, everybody was, am I gonna get fired? Like, am I gonna get yelled at today? What agent or member of the company is going to come in and scream at us today, who's going to what is Kate going to call, here we are doing the same thing again over and over again. So it's far less stress, far less BS, I feel, this time. But it's still wrestling. You still have to go out there. We still have a couple practices a week. We still have television on Wednesdays. We still have a couple, you know, live events every weekend, which, you know, draw, you know, a few hundred people. You know, it draws an indie crowd, you know, but they're very vocal and follow all the storylines. The shows, I think, are very much of a higher quality overall than your average independent. Because a lot of these guys here, this is what they do full time. They take it seriously. You know, they're in the gym, they're at practice, and they're much more talented and much more groomed than you would get anywhere else on the independents, probably. So that's kind of the difference, per se. I feel a lot more comfortable, maybe because it's kind of old habits here for me at this point. Like, I'm falling back in and just like, okay, you know, here's my gym, here's the ring time. You know, staff's a little bit different. Still Danny Davis is still running things. Al is still heavily involved, especially on the television side of things. So I see them, I'll see them once a week. So it's like you have Al Snow, who is a very important cog in the TNA machine, is here weekly. And Danny Davis is here, you know, if not daily, weekly. You know, and that's going right back to the TNA office, where WWE, it felt like sometimes, like do you clowns even watch the TV show we send you guys, or watch the footage we send you guys? Because you had no idea what's going on down here in OVW, or who was even in the camp, what was going on television. Or, you know, then they would just show up and, you know, they'd expect like miracles some days. And they're like, do you guys read these reports that get sent up, you know, of who's ready and who's not? Do you guys watch the TV show we upload for you? It was just like, felt a lot of times you were just kind of lost in the shuffle, I felt. But again, that's kind of like the major differences I see. You know, it's still wrestling. You know, we're not reinventing the wheel here. So it's still round. It's, you know, there's not as many contracted talents that there were. I think there's maybe, 10 to a dozen of us here. And as far as, you know, you not seeing any of these gut checkers, it might not necessarily be a bad thing. I'm not throwing dirt on anybody. So maybe these guys aren't necessarily ready for a full-time spot. You know, they're here to be groomed or to improve so they can handle being on TV every week and handle the pressures and delivering every week on live events too. And at the same time, maybe it's something from creative where they just haven't found something to work them in to the cards and the storyline, so to say, because you have Bruce Pritchard, who was involved with WWE for how many years, and you have Al Snow, who was involved with talent development for how many years in WWE. So you have people who are knowledgeable and know what they're talking about. So, it's not necessarily a bad thing, and nowhere, and I don't think in my contract, and probably no one else's, does it guarantee you anything more than, hey, we're going to pay you X amount of dollars for X amount of time to be a pro wrestler to get better. You know, that's their obligation, and my obligation is to make myself some sort of usable commodity or asset to the company to get myself there. It's not on the company. It's on me as a performer. So as far as that goes.
Talk a little bit about your WWE developmental training. Obviously, you spent 3 years in developmental. We were just talking that you went from Deep South, OVW, and Florida Championship Wrestling. How did they differ in terms of development? And what was your, I would think of those three, that the favorite probably would be OVW.
It definitely was. Deep South, very drill intense, very, very heavy ring time as far as just a punishment on your body with Bill DeMott. You know, I'd rather not get into, you know, the whole with Bill and his attitude or perception of his attitude. It's, you know, it's just, it's been rehashed all over the net 1,000 times. And, I mean, any issue I've had with Bill has been dead and buried a long time, and it's water and the bridge, if there ever was an issue. I mean, it was kind of a love-hate relationship between him and I. But very, very intense, a lot of hard drilling. You know, it was a hard, 2 to 3 hours of practice, 4 or 5 days a week, sometimes 6, with minimal shows. So it did get kind of grueling. It did get very tedious. you know, just drilling and bumping in front of nobody in the ring and the arena day in and day out. But I did improve vastly. You know, I wouldn't have been given the opportunity to be their champion like two or three times if I wasn't ready, if I didn't have something to offer, and if I didn't see something in me. So I'm grateful I got the opportunity to be there. I mean, you think of the people that I was there with besides Bill. I got to work with Dave Taylor for about a year. I got to work with Dr. Tom for the first time, Brad Armstrong, Benoit came in there a couple of times, Finley came in there. Who else? Regal was in and out of there quite a bit. God, you know, Jody Hamilton, the Assassin, who's been around wrestling forever, you know, ran the place. So yeah, I got to pick up the brains and acquire wrestling knowledge from all those guys. And then when I went to OVW, it was almost like night and day, because as opposed to having four or five practices a week and really not having a TV show, it was the opposite. I had TV, weekly TV every Wednesday, and then I had anywhere from 3 to 5 live events every week at OVW. So practices were much different, where they were almost like skull sessions or film review sessions of picking your stuff apart and improving that way and saving your body. And then going out there on these towns and really finding out what works and doesn't work for you as a performer. And what I love that about OVW, because I was truly being paid to wrestle on shows. And aside from that, you know, I got to work with Al Snow, Danny Davis, Robert Gibson, Barry Windham and Arn Anderson helped me out a lot during that time, especially when I was on the road that entire summer with the Raw tour. And they would just take me to camp in the afternoons before the live events and just their pet project of the summer, which was awesome. And Dr. Death was in and out of there. There were so many guys that I got to learn from. But then at the same time, I became just a guy just doing wrestling and doing wrestling moves and kind of doing a very similar match every night, to truly being a performer, a pro wrestler, and a worker. And I learned how to make myself another guy doing moves in the ring, to be a star, to have that something extra, to have that character, and really connect with the audience to where, you know, you become a, you know, not only a star, but an asset to whatever company you're with, because, you know, you can get put in the ring with anybody and deliver a different match every night. I really learned that from Al and Robert Gibson at OVW through doing all those shows and then learning how to do it on TV. So that's where I really feel I became the wrestler, or sorry, become the wrestler I am today, was there. As far as FCW, I really don't feel I was there, or when I was there, it was really up and going yet. We got there, you know, the arena wasn't finished yet. You know, one show a week in this really dingy bar, and, you know, we didn't have a television deal. Finally, when we started running shows at the arena, and then we got the television deal, but I wasn't on TV yet because I was getting ready to go to the main roster, so Dusty wouldn't use me in Florida TV. And then I got caught in like this quasi like no man's land where like I was technically on a SmackDown roster, but I wasn't on TV because Vince kept changing his mind on what to do with me, and I wasn't technically on the FCW roster, so Dusty wasn't writing for me on television, yet I still had to be in FCW when I wasn't on the road. So like I was showing up in practice, and like Steve Kern was like, "Why are you here? Like you don't." I'm like, "I still need to be. They're telling me to be." And he's like, "Oh." He's like, "Well, would you mind helping guys out today?" And to the point where he was giving me a ring, and help, and telling me to help, you know, teach new guys. And because there was just, I think Steve and Tom and Norman were just so overwhelmed. You know, when you have like 70 guys, the majority of whom have barely been in a ring before, and they just needed a little bit of extra help. That didn't last too long until, Ty Bailey, put the kibosh on, talent, training other talent, which is asinine because, you all learn from each other in this business. That just was another bad move by Ty because he never really truly understood pro wrestling because he was never from this business. You know, when I also was there, we only had maybe one or two live events a month plus the one arena show a week. So I went back to a lot of training in the ring, but just overwhelmed because you had three or four rings and you had like anywhere from 50 to 70 guys there. So like you'd be there for 3 or 4 hours and maybe only get in the ring, a half hour because there's just so many people there and so many things going on. And things were, it was, like I said, I don't feel things were necessarily totally set when I was there. They seemed to be always playing catch up a little bit. Like, all right, we got to split practice and now we got more guys. So we can't split practice because we don't have enough guys at certain levels and a lot of things, still in the works, probably much different now 4 or 5 years later. But again, you still learn. I got to, work a lot of my promos with Dusty down there, which was a really good thing for me. I got to, really learn much more how to lead people through, matches that were much more inexperienced than me. And I got to work with guys like, Norman Smiley, who's been everywhere around the world, pro wrestling, which was really cool to pick his brain and get ideas, things that he did in lucha style down in Mexico that I wouldn't have necessarily known about, that worked well for me that I got to implement. So those were kind of in a nutshell. That's the very crammed nutshell of my, three years plus in developmental.
Then you do the 3 years of developmental. As you said, Vince was trying to decide what to do with you, and they give you the Ryan Braddock character. Who came up with that, and what was your thoughts on becoming Ryan Braddock?
Character itself, I don't really think got displayed. It was pretty much just supposed to be the gimmick I was doing previously in OVW, which was, I called myself the ass kicker, and I was this almost like Nelson Muntz like bully who, beat people up and then would knock them out with the boomstick clothesline and then laugh about it. And there was a couple things that were supposed to take off that never did for that. Initially, Mike Mondo was supposed to be my tag partner slash like mini me. So we were kind of like the gang of bullies, and I was the big dog, and he was the little dog. And that just as that was getting ready to go to TV, Mondo was released. So that got mixed. And then prior to that, literally the day after we were told we were moving to Florida, I got called by the SmackDown team, said, hey, we're getting ready to debut you and Asuka Jr. as a tag team. We want you to just be you. Same thing, do the ask your gimmick, this rugged guy from Chicago, just beats people up and often just can be the Samoan. And they picture this kind of like as a newer APA. And just as that happened, Afa got suspended. So it was kind of like this horrible comedy of errors that kept happening to me. And then finally, I got pulled up on the roster, and the thought was to put me in a tag team again or have, a duo with Bam Neely, who was from Minnesota. I was from Chicago, and somewhat like the Bash Brothers from hockey, from the Mighty Ducks movies. One kid was this rugged street kid from Chicago, the other one was a rugged street kid from Minnesota, and they just beat people up. They were goons. And that's where it was supposed to go when I got bubble wrapped from Jesse and Festus. And then Bam was finishing up with Edge and Chavo at the time. And then the next episode of SmackDown on the new network was supposed to you were supposed to see a vignette that never aired of Bam finding me in the back of the truck, unwrapping me and going, we got to do something about this. And me and him were supposed to come in and start beating it out of everybody. But that got cut due to time constraints. And then, for whatever reason, Vince soured on the idea and wanted to keep me as a singles guy. So I was getting ready to go to the European tour that winter, that November of like 08, I think. And I worked the dark match versus Kizarni, and I ended up getting really over with the crowd. And Vince came and grabbed me and, you know, brought me in his office after the match and was like, I really like, you know, what seeing you. You know, you're rugged, but your look and your work match. You know, your look matches the way you wrestle, your style. He's like, I got some ideas for you, but do me a favor. Go cut your hair and shave your face. So I'm like, okay, I thought you just said you liked my look, but okay. So Laurinaitis took me over to the stylist. He gave her Vince's orders and cut my hair, shaved my face, completely changed my look, and then there went Vince's ideas. So after that, it was a few months of just crawling in the dark, and then they finally decided we don't have anything for you anymore. So
that was the official story, that they didn't have anything for you and that you were free to go?
Yeah, that was pretty much it. That's, you know, the usual generic term that, you know, they gave everybody.
Future endeavored.
Future, yes.
Obviously, I would think your perspective is that you didn't get a fair shake in WWE.
No, you know, what's fair is so subjective.
Right. I mean, you paid your dues. You went through all the developmental territories. 3 years there, you were their developmental champions. You developed a character. They bring you to television. They change your look, and then they say, "Well, you know, Jay, we have nothing for you. I'm sorry."
Yeah, I mean, and I mean, it's so subjective, because by their point of view, all their contract obligation to do is pay me whatever they need to a year, and
right.
And give me an opportunity to learn from that, you know, and so for their obligation has been fulfilled on their part, you know, and then I'm with your agreement, like, okay, like, how many times can Laurinaitis or whoever come down to the camp and say, you know, the guys that stand out or the guys that do well, and develop characters and become leaders, or the guys that are going to be, you know, brought up on TV are going to be, you know, we're going to create something for. Well, I'm still waiting, guys. you know, and I think that's kind of a sad thing, is I think it they've missed out on so much talent. I think Vince is constantly looking for like this huge star, you know, the next, you know, Cena, Hogan, Rock, Austin type of guy, and he thinks he can engineer him in developmental. And not to say that he necessarily can't, but I think they're slowly, finally, with Triple H taking the helm of talent, realizing that, you know, these guys from coming from the independents, you know, if we look for them, there are diamonds in the rough. You know, not all the independents are crap like they thought about a few years ago. And you take these guys that gone through the Indies that have the passion to travel all over to learn or to do what they love, you know, you found success. Like, look at Punk, look at Claudio's new ring name is, look at the guys in the Shield, or two of them at least, Evan Bourne, Kofi. All these guys came up through the independents. You know, Beth Phoenix, even up until, you know, she departed, came from the independents. You know, so you had these guys who were commodities or stars, and then you have so many of these guys that, you know, like me, like, you know, Sean Spears in the same category as me. Casey James is another guy. Cassie Riley's another guy. Colt Cabana's another guy. Mike Kruel's another guy. You know, Paul Burchill's another guy. You know, Chet Chabon. I can go up and down. You know, I would have taken that OVW roster that I was on, you know, 5 years ago and put it up against any of the product that WWE had at that time. It was way better. The talent was way better. But, you know, for whatever reason, you know, bro, we don't have anything for you. Well, did you even look? You know, or did you just kind of take a glance at a page, or, oh, we need to cut the budget today? And, you know, I heard this story. Basically, Vince gets people, the creative team and the conference room or his office or whatever, and basically when it's time to, he wants to trim the budget, they read off every talent's name, and if no one creative says they have ideas for him, you're fired.
Wow.
You know, you're like, it's that easy sometimes, and you're like, really? Like, so maybe the guy that was writing for him just wasn't there that day, or was taking a cup of coffee, you know, a coffee break or a piss, or and I'm just gone.
Right.
So, you know, and at the flip side of it, you know, I got probably the best pro wrestling training anybody's ever going to have. You know, not to sit here and fluff my own tail, but we're interviewing me, so I'm going to talk about myself, right?
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
You know, like, yeah. think about all these names and all this talent that I've got to work with. I got to work on my promos with one of the best talkers of all time, Dusty Rhodes. I've got to be in the ring with some of the best in-ring minds of all time, Arn Anderson, Fit Finley, Barry Windham. Oh, man, like, you know, Dr. Tom Pritchard, the guy who's trained, you know, had a hand in training how many, you know, superstars, you know, Orton, Edge, Kurt Angle. God, you go up and down the roster of who Tom has got his hands on. Al Snow, the same thing. You know, how many guys have been groomed by Al to really be stars for both companies now. You know, I got to work with all of them. You know, aside from all the people that I've gotten the ring with over the years as far as talent goes and had matches with. Man, like, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm saying, finally, you know, Keane realizes I'm sitting here and I can be, you know, a viable commodity and a star for this company. I mean, just, you know, my pedigree and my experience sheet as far as pro wrestling goes, kind of like, it's kind of a who's who in the last, you know, 20 years or so of trainers, coaches, you know, and mentors sort of thing. So, and I'm really excited for the opportunity that I have now to just kind of showcase to the world at large, like, hey, yeah, this is what I am, and kind of smirk at the other company and be like, this is what you guys missed out on.
What was it like? I know you trained with Colt Cabana and CM Punk in Chicago. Talk about that training, your initial training, and then are you friends with those two? Do you keep up with them, CM Punk and Colt Cabana?
No, I don't know that. I don't think there's anything like that. We've just all gone separate paths. They were always way tighter than I was with either one of them. I was always kind of like, at the time, the chubby kid, the little brother figure that, you know, everybody kind of picked on in the school. And then suddenly I kind of grew up and got in really good shape, and everybody was kind of like, whoa, you know, he's not that anymore. You know, from them, you know, for a while, like, I couldn't train for a little while due to some medical issues back then. But, you know, we all kind of started together. They kind of went a little bit further ahead because, you know, I had to take that break. And, you know, but they kind of set a really good example for just as far as, like, staying busy, staying booked, and helping me kind of get bookings later on, because they already networked in with so many promoters, and it was just kind of like, hey, we got this other guy, can he come in next time, give him a look, sort of thing. So they helped me get in a lot of places and get looks. But as far as, you know, I saw Punk and Cabana probably, when did I see them? Maybe in the fall at that comedy benefit show that they both did in Chicago. Real brief conversation with them both, you know, brief pleasantries, caught up a little bit. But prior to that, I hadn't seen Punk probably since I got fired from WWE, and then me and Colt usually kind of run into each other here and there on the indies and catch up a little bit too. So I think the last time I saw Colt was actually, he had that horrible, bloody looking vagina thing on his hand when he got that infection and that surgery, which was really not pleasant to see, but I think that was the last time I ran into Colt.
What is the origin of the boomstick name for your lariat finisher?
Where that came from? I had just done like an entire summer on the road for Raw. And that's the summer where I was working a lot with like Barry Windham and Arn in the ring. And they loved the clothesline. And I always liked my clothesline. I wanted to use it as a finisher. They loved it. They're like, it's your best looking move. Like, it looks like you can kill the guy. You know, you got to run with that. And JBL at the time was done with the company. This is when his back was really messed up before he came back for the last stint in the ring. So when I was done with that stint on the road, you know, me and Al, you know, talked about, we knew I needed to come up with some sort of character or persona, something to really connect with the crowd, to give the writer something to write for, to get noticed more other than just my in-ring work. And where it came from was actually twofold. Actually, it's from, you know, the Bruce Campbell movies where he calls his shotgun his boomstick. You know, that's initially where the nickname stuck, but where I put two and two together was I was at a live event for OBW and I clotheslined, you know, someone for the finish. And when I got out of the ring, there was this little kid swinging his arm going, boom, boom. And it just clicked in my head, like, you know, call it my boomstick, you know, swinging your arm like a big club or a stick and make people go boom.
I think it's really cool. I really like it. How's your body holding up? Obviously, you've been in the business for quite a while now. Obviously, a lot of bumps and bruises. Just wondering how you're doing physically these days.
I've never had a major injury, knock on wood. You know, the body feels really, really good. I'm probably in the best shape I've ever been in my life. You know, I'm holding at about 250 right now, which is about my body's comfort weight. I'm probably getting close to about as lean as I've ever been. You know, the worst I've had is some broken fingers here and there. The unfortunate concussion, which I think is kind of fairly standard, both of those two in pro wrestling. I actually went to the chiro for the first time in a while the other day, and he did the full x-rays. He was, especially with someone like you, he was surprised. He was, you know, you had nothing degenerative in any of your discs. All your discs have plenty of spaces. All your joints are healthy. There's no spurring. There's no degeneration. There's nothing forming of any sort of arthritis. The only thing was his concern is my hips seem to be a little bit higher than the other and then rotated slightly. So he goes, but that's nothing. A couple trips to the office to pop me back into place won't fix. I typically, you know, as far as like I eat really healthy, obviously to take care of myself, I stay in shape. I kind of been, you know, staying away from a lot of the heavy lifting the last couple of years in favor of intense, like, MMA-style conditioning drills. Just to keep my wind up in the ring. And I just started DDP yoga again. And I say again because he gave me the old program when I met him in Deep South, and I did that for a while. And then kind of, you know, forgot about it, so to say. And then, you know, when I got the new one and it just kicked my ass the other day where I'm sore in like a completely different way in muscles I haven't had soreness in a long time. So it was a ball buster. After the hour, I was like, I had sweat through all my clothes. So I was pretty impressed. And I'm actually looking forward to kind of giving that a go for the next couple of weeks.
Cool. I just wondered, what's been like your best match? Or sometimes it's hard to pick one match. You have like maybe a career highlight or something that really sticks out when you look back at your career?
You know what? That's so hard for me to pick one out. I mean, I want to say, like, oh, there's so many. Like, you know, wrestling Punk in front of a couple thousand people here, or not here in Chicago, but down in Louisville for OBW was just a cool moment. You know, there's a handful of times I had house show matches that were just awesome for, you know, both OVW and WWE, you know, working like Evan Bourne or Kofi Kingston. There's a couple of really good tag matches where it was like Colt and Matt Sydal versus like me and Sean Spears that were just really, really fun. Some of the more recent stuff that I've done with, you know, Resistance Pro out of Chicago, which was Billy Corrigan's group with Robert Anthony, has been really fun and fulfilling because it's just kind of been, here, you guys, you know, go do your thing, you know, whatever you guys want to do, you know, no restrictions, just very liberal, which is always fun because, you know, it's kind of, you know, whatever you want to create that, but you can, there's really no more input other than just get you two in the ring, go have fun. So, yeah, I think at my point, after doing this for about 15 years, like, and probably a few thousand matches, a lot of them start blurring together. So I'll start driving down the expressway. I'm like, I think I've wrestled here before. And I don't know for who or when, but it just looks really familiar, and then something will trigger, and I'm like, oh, yeah, this is this match or something. So,
who's your all-time favorite wrestler?
I have a few guys that I really watch. I think some of my if you watch my style, my big influences, the guys I watch a lot are Arn Anderson, Barry Windham, Stan Hansen, and Terry Gordy, probably in my top guys that I watch a lot. Even to this day, I study those guys and always trying to get more footage of them from different eras and different times, but those are usually them.
And the last question I've had for you, because I was curious, the origins of your tattoos, how long you had them, and what was your thoughts on getting those tattoos?
My tattoos, the monster face I had on my arm, I've had for a number of years. I got it during college. It was actually a picture I drew, or at least the face part of it, of the picture of what I thought Grendel from Beowulf would look like, prior to any movie adaptation coming out. I've had that tattoo for probably 10 to 12 years now. And I always thought, Grendel was the original heel, the original bad guy in literature and in like the action sort of genre of storytelling. So I thought that was a cool symbolism. And then literally the day I got released from WWE, I called the tattoo artist I knew in Tampa and just started getting all the tattoos that I had wanted to get over the years, but not able to because my contract with WWE wouldn't let me. So I have a giant phoenix on my leg, which is one of my birth / life symbols, is a phoenix of, resurrection or reinvention. There is a Chicago flag on it, being from I'm a Chicago boy, obviously. And no, it's not a CM Punk tattoo for you people who didn't realize Chicago had a flag, which I've been asked before. and then there's some, there's some filler in there that's kind of wind for the Windy City. Obviously, this was Chicago's nickname. The other side of that leg is a giant lucha mask with a saying in Latin above it that says Stella Sequius Durando, which is equal to the stars and endurance. Basically, I'll never give up wrestling. And then on my arm, I have a cross or a crucifix made of steel, which is symbolism of just, never-ending faith in yourself, faith in life, faith in, whatever it is your spirituality is. It's different for everybody. But just, have faith. Things are going to be all right. You'll be all right. Have faith in yourself. Have confidence. There is a fallen angel on the other side, which I got in memento of my time in WWE, because I figured if I had a guardian angel, her ass would be worn out and tired from dealing with all the bullshit she had to deal with from my time in developmental. The back of that, there is actually the Serenity Prayer, which regardless of my beliefs or anyone else's belief, I thought it was a very cool, short prayer or poem of just kind of like, let things be. Again, have faith, let things be, everything's going to be all right. And then around it is kind of stained glass pieces. It's kind of like I didn't want to use the standard tattoo filler that everybody else goes and gets of like wind or waves or, skulls or anything that seem to be really trendy nowadays. I really wanted it to be different and kind of unique to me. I have some more pieces I'm going to add on to it and some more touch-ups to do probably in the near future. But those are the major pieces, and I'll kind of start probably filling it in and tweaking it here and there. And then, like I said...
Awesome. Well, Jay, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I've been following your career for a while. I definitely have been following it since the developmental days, and we were happy to see you get a chance to be on WWE television, if it was only for a short stint. And now we wish you the best of luck with TNA. And before you leave us, why don't you go ahead and plug your social media, website, and how can fans get a hold of you?
Yeah, if you want to follow me on Twitter, real easy. Use that fun little A symbol, which is, as you may or may not know, the ampersand, which is, and then it's J, J-A-Y, Bradley, B-R-A-D-L-E-Y, just like my ring name, followed by P-W for pro wrestling. And then you can also find me on a Facebook fan page, which is facebook.com/JBradleyImpactWrestling, all one word. And then I am beginning a website soon, which again is just like the Twitter handle, jbradleypw.com. You can also go to either one of those. There's usually some sort of link floating around for, you know, my eBay store if anybody wants to check out shirts or merch or anything else like that. I've got some fun stuff in the works. Anybody promoters out there, I'm available to do, you know, third-party booking still with the office if you're interested. Awesome. Email is really easy, jbradleypw@gmail.com. So.
We'll definitely encourage the fans and the promoters out there to get a hold of you and definitely check you out through social media. And hopefully we'll get a chance to see you real soon on Impact Wrestling. So we appreciate your time today, and we wish you nothing but the best of luck.
All right, I appreciate your time, Steve. Thank you very much for having me on.